Welcome to Entrepreneurs the Playbook. I'm David Meltzer. We're here live in London at the incredible Bulgari Cinema. And I am blessed to have one of the greatest leaders in the UK and India. He's on a mission to change the world, aligned with my mission of empowering over a billion people to be happy. Both of us subscribe to many of the same philosophies. He's been a mentor, a teacher, and a coach of mine, and a friend, and even maybe family. The incredible Kishore Lula, welcome to the Playbook.
Thank you, David. Thank you so much.
I'm so pleased that we get to do this again, because I think the world needs to know how innovation is related to culture. We've been talking about people don't work for companies anymore. They work for culture. Mm-hmm. The blue zones that are around the world aren't about the food, the environment. It's about culture. But one of the biggest fears that I have about AI is, number one, I was talking about the ears aren't active. They work no matter what you think. You're sleeping, the ears are still working. Well, because of AI, our thinking's becoming like our ears. We have knowledge instantly, but unfortunately, the knowledge that we get is missing certain aspects of human nature, of humanity, and human experience. How is AI today relative to culture, and what are you doing at Eros to help facilitate culture into AI?
Okay. I think, David, excellent point. First of all, I think we should be thankful to AI, and especially the LLM models. It has done a generational shift for the humankind in the last 3 years. What has AI given us? AI has given us scale, intelligence, reasoning. So let's assume today, average, if you take the average of the AI models, the IQ will be around 160 to 180. That will be an IQ of Einstein, right? And by the time AGI comes in and ASI comes in, I think this can go to 1,000. So just imagine the IQ levels of AI, what will power. But what we don't have to be scared. Just imagine when Microsoft had launched the Windows. Everybody was worried about what is going to happen. And look what Microsoft changed. And then the same thing with the smartphones in 2000. It did change the whole economy. And look at the S&P 500 in 1980 and S&P 500 today. There are not even 20% of those companies in the S&P 500 today. So we have to embrace change. So what AI did basically, actually last 20 years, the social media, the search engines collected all our data, has the data, LLMs domesticated our data and converted them into chatbots and give it back to us as LLM. So what it's got the scale, it's got the, you know, everything. Now, what LLM doesn't understand is culture, right? So I was just chatting to you outside. I know David, and I was very inspired by David. You know, I think everybody must have seen this movie, Jerry Maguire, right?
Yes, you're young.
This is the guy. Jerry Maguire. He is Jerry Maguire, correct? The movie was inspired by him. Now, the same thing, Jerry Maguire, he's the agent, and then there was R.E. Goldsmith, and then Entourage, and different movies. If you tell AI to analyze that, they will not differentiate between you and R.E. Yeah. They will put you in one box as agent, correct?
Yeah, no
differentiation. So, intelligence, scale, everything comes from LLMs. The next wave of the models is going to be culture. What happens in London? What happens in the US or country music or Shakespeare or, you know, India or China or Japan? I think everything has to be with the cultural models.
In a wide environment. So one of the biggest fears that I have being a student is that we're, because of all the data, we're losing the Napoleon Hills, the Wayne Dyers, the Bob Proctors of the world, Brian Tracy, Zig Ziglar. And there's so much information that they weren't around to preserve or to perpetuate their content. Can we bring back the thought leaders, the entertainers, and allow them to entertain still or educate within the context of their individuality and culture?
It's inevitable, David. Just imagine when electricity came in, when the electricity was discovered, the national grid had to be built. So imagine LLM models are like national grid. So first, it's going to empower. So now the models which will be built around the national grid on the LLMs is the future. So it is going to, it ought to happen. That means what will happen? So, and that's what we are doing. We are doing the innovation. So we, as a Eros Innovation Company, own about 1.5 to 2 trillion tokens. So let me understand, you know, the, how these people are, you must have heard tokens. Sure. There are different tokens. But the AI tokens is every image, every word, every script, or everything, you know, cultural tokens. So because we own so much cultural tokens, and they have been certified by the censors in every country and curated properly, correct? So about 2 trillion tokens. Now, you must have seen that this model is, you know, trained on 200 billion tokens or 1 trillion tokens or something like that. We took LLM as a base and, you know, our diffusion models, and then started training on our tokens, which understands culture. So now what will happen? So just imagine the cultural model, again, is like a Google map or a local guide if you go somewhere. So if you have a culture model trained for every country differently, and especially, you know, I think sovereign AI is inevitable now, especially what happened with when Fable 5 got, you know, banned for the countries, and then, you know, it all happened. So every country is thinking we should have our sovereign AI. The major problem is security today.
Sure.
So every country wants to have their own sovereign AI. Every country wants to have the data to remain in their country. They don't want that data. And every country wants to get paid for their data, not for the multi-trillion dollar companies to scrape the net and then, you know, the company suing them and to for the compensation. They don't want that. So that's what is happening, sovereign AI. And then on the other hand, you have China coming with the open weights. 3 years ago, you know, the LLM model, when it was released, it took 6 months or 1 year before, you know, anybody could catch up. It became open source. Now, 24 hours, China gives a open weight to Fable 5 in 24 hours and at 1/10 of the cost. So say suppose X task of Fable 5, the best model or the Mythos model which is coming, is costing you $100,000 for a task. That will be done by the open weight at $10,000 to $20,000. And China is saying, I'm going to make it open for anyone, every company to take it and train it.
We're afraid of what we don't know. I started in technology in 1992 and faced great resistance. Number one, I graduated law school and my mom told me that the internet was a fad. It never was going to last. If I wasn't a real lawyer, I was making the biggest mistake of my life. And then when I started to work for Westlaw, Legal Research Online, which, by the way, we exited in 95 for $3.4 billion with a B. That was a big deal in 1995. But Justice Scalia told me when he saw the first natural, it was in DOS, but we had the search engine, and he said, son, nobody will ever do research on a computer. You need books.
Yes.
So you can see the disconnect that we have the wisest, most intelligent Supreme Court justice, a legal scholar beyond, and yet he doesn't understand that a computer is better for research than books, which obviously it is. So where's the disconnect today with AI when we're talking about at what I would say a very sophisticated level of culture and AI, and the biggest leaders today, I don't think they have a clue, the same as Justice Scalia doesn't. Where's the disconnect, and how can we help them understand so there's not as much fear and plus ignorance?
I think you answered it. The biggest disconnect is fear and ignorance.
Yeah.
Nothing else. See, they think AI is going to replace humans. That's not at all possible.
I agree.
AI is going to assist humans.
Make humans
that
more
should
human.
Be the mindset.
Right, make humans more human.
Yes. No, it's exactly what happened when the computers came in, 80s, or the, you know, the smartphones came in. It is assisting. So think AI as your executive assistant.
Yeah. And one of the other things that I like about the change, and change happens quick, is that entrepreneurs adjust, right? There's always this problem, and then it's not a problem anymore because it's just a matter of time before entrepreneurs come up with the solution. Filling the hole in the atmosphere, you know, someday I think they'll be able to convert plastic to food. literally, I don't think, we just need time, yeah. Is why we recycle. Recycling is not going to cure our problem, but it'll give entrepreneurs enough time to figure out how to cure the problem. And that's why I think entrepreneurship, and you being one of the greatest entrepreneurs maybe in history, not to kiss your ass, but I think so with this stuff that you're doing. Where can we help entrepreneurs, your Eros innovation, where can we help entrepreneurs and guide them towards utilizing this to make humans more human?
See, I think two or three things here. So first thing, as we said, fear and ignorance should be totally avoided.
Yeah.
Second, I think ethics, right? Righteousness.
You mentioned outside that.
So LLMs and AI can tell you what is right or wrong, but it cannot tell you what is righteous. Culture can tell you what is righteous. Now, as per the Vedanta, which I follow, it says when you follow the path of dharma, that is when you follow the path of righteousness, the challenges will come and the challenges will keep on coming. So life is like a video game. Play it at level one, be at comfort zone and keep on playing it and saying that, okay, I've arrived. Or you start, life is like video game, keep on playing. Never-ending championship. Till the day you die, you want to go to level up.
Yeah.
And when you achieve that level, game over. So I think you should never be afraid of challenges. So the day you take out fear and you embrace challenge and say that this challenge is going to actually define me. You go to the gym, you know, you pump the same weights or you do the same pose, you don't grow.
Right.
Then, you know, that's how, so the life is like that. The problem with the entrepreneurs today or anyone is that they run away from challenges. They want, everybody wants a shortcut.
Be comfortable.
Right. Jerry Maguire, right? Challenge, right? Yeah. Same thing, right? How many challenges, David, you faced before you arrived?
Every day.
So I think the same message, you know, that's the entrepreneurs. I think if there's no challenge, no entrepreneurship.
I agree. One of the things you explained to me as my mentor is a lot of, especially people in Western culture, don't understand dharma. And you had a very famous interview years past as well, and you explained to me this tennis ball analogy, which I thought was not only fascinating, but was simple. It was the first time that I think I really understood how dharma works. And it's such a great example. I was hoping you could explain dharma and use that.
See, at Eros Wellness, we're using the AI models. So, you know, and especially health is, you know, very, and especially my wife, she's founded this company. She's here. Body, 60 trillion cells, 60,000 thoughts a day. Every cell has 1.4 volts, 700 trillion volts of electricity in one body. That's the science, correct? And especially I learned from people like Bruce Lipton and other scientists we work with, right? So they say that every thought is got so much energy. And especially the Nobel Prize winner scientist from Japan, I forgot the name of Nikimoto, right?
Yeah.
He had put water into, and he spoke only positive to one water and negative to one water. That negative became black within 2 days, 3 days, and this became crystals. And body is 70% water. Let's go, you know, through the, you know, whatever the science says, right? Now, there are four types of thoughts. First, supernatural thoughts, like when you connect with the divine. Call it consciousness, light, whatever you call it. Second is positive thoughts. Everybody's positive about that. Third is, you know, necessary thoughts, that whatever you need to do. And fourth is the negative thoughts. So these are the four thoughts. So like, you know, how the calories is, you know, how many calories, what, you know, when you work out, exactly that. Now you get 60,000 thoughts and you divine and whatever you emanate. So the first three categories are the white balls and the fourth category are the black balls, let's assume. So you're playing tennis and you hit the ball to the wall and it comes back, the gravity, much faster. So every thought you emanate is the law, basically. There is no such thing. There is no such, whatever you've emanated has to come back to you. So the destiny is created by you, nobody else. So the cumulative thoughts you were born and when you were brought up, and especially they're saying the subconscious mind is developed in the first 7 years. After the first 7 years, you have got a window, a very little window of changing your subconscious mind. So you've got conscious mind, unconscious mind, subconscious mind, correct? Yeah. So every thought accumulates into your subconscious mind, and then that's what happens. So I think there's only one formula in life for health, relationships, love, or money, career, correct? Whatever is your thoughts. That's the root. So it's like the phone you're holding now. And if something happens to the phone, you can't fix it. You have to reset it, right? You have to restart it or, you know, get your trash out or, you know, clean it up or whatever. But it happens at that level. So if you concentrate everything on the thought level and try and get the 60,000 thoughts and zero negative thoughts, done. The life will be, but there's no guarantee it will happen tomorrow because it's the previous baggages, those balls are waiting to come back.
I love that. We talk about frequency as well and how awareness is relative to frequency. And I think it's relative to the frequency of different types of AI because it carries a frequency. It has its own consciousness. And the two different consciousness that I play with within the conscious, subconscious, and unconscious mind is understanding immersive or collective consciousness with witness consciousness.
Yeah.
So the analogy that may help all of you is that if you're watching a TV program like Jerry Maguire, you might be like a shore and be immersed into it. So your kids are talking to you and you don't hear them. But a commercial comes on, you now are witnessing the same exact TV, but you're separate from it. And meanwhile, there's millions of other pieces of content that are at the exact same time going on that you are not immersed in or witness, but they exist in the same consciousness. It is, in my opinion, frequency that we have to understand so that we can elevate our awareness to what we immerse in and what we witness, because that's what creates this dharma of what comes back to us by doing, saying, thinking, feeling, and believing it. You believe as well that frequency and vibration is in everything, and how does that relate to your success and awareness of that?
David, spot on, right? First of all, the frequency is the byproduct of thoughts. So what happens? Whatever the thoughts you emanate, that will be the frequency you will be vibrating at. Stephen Hawkins, correct? You and me discussed, you know, different thoughts like judgment, you know, all this anger, enviousness, and everything is vibrating below 200, correct? Love is vibrating at 400, joy is vibrating at 500, enlightenment is X. What his theory was, 98.6% of the world's population is vibrating below 200. That is the major cause of the disease. See, Bruce Lipton says that we are not a physical body. Epigenetics, correct? We are collective consciousness, right? So the thoughts you emanate actually affects your health, affects your relationship, affects everything. So the vibrational frequency is the byproduct of the thought. And then, you know, all the scientists are different, working on different vibration and different vibration frequencies. And then, you know, you have at 4.2, 4.3 to HZ. Now with the AI models, you've got the plant, you know, you can speak to plants, you can speak to animals, you can, you know what they're talking about, correct? Everything has come to that. They've decoded that, right? Now, the frequency, nature is vibrating. Say, suppose, whatever the scientists say today, if you want to reset your frequency, go to nature. Sun, air, water, trees, you know, everything. They are vibrating. They don't give up their nature. But what we humans are doing, we are changing our nature the way people surrounding us. We want to imitate other people and want to become them. You don't want to become yourself.
Mm. So true that... In that comes that fear of other people's opinion and identity problems. One of the things in meaning, and if you understand, we give meaning to everything we see, is people give the wrong meaning to their past, so they limit their self-image. So I'll take my bankruptcy in all humility, that, you know, this defining moment that a lot of people
may have. But that could have been the best thing in your life, right?
Correct. And it is. But at the time, like my mom told me when I went bankrupt, I lost her home. And this experience, she said to me, I said, why is God punishing me? And her response, and she had just found out I went bankrupt. Because if you lose over $100 million and go bankrupt, you wait till the last minute to tell your wife you're in trouble, and you definitely don't tell your mom. till afterwards, right? You got enough problems. So this is not a good situation. I'm crying. And I said, why is God punishing me? And my mom's response was, God does not punish. He loves you. He's protecting you, promoting you, and perfecting you. Son, you need to figure this out, and I'm here to help you. And I get choked up thinking about that. And in that aspect of faith, there's also science, right? There's this omniscient, all-powerful, all-knowing energy, and I'm not bright enough to understand how I was moving in the wrong direction. And so my dharma, or what ended up protecting me, saving my marriage, saving my life, and creating much a greater journey for me. And this, a lot of people may say, is predetermined, but it's not the actual event that's predetermined. It's my divine direction, and it's my free will that allows me to determine how much time it's going to take me in my divine direction. Is there some semblance of that?
I think David rightly said, you know, and this is what transformed you today, correct? I think it's called the science of creative destruction. Until your old you, that methods didn't destruct, you could have never reached here. So I call it creative destruction. And everybody has to go through that creative destruction. So that means the analogy comes to only one thing, correct? Acceptance, number one, whatever you are. Number two, surrender. That, you know, to the will of, whether you call it God, consciousness, and people have different beliefs.
Source, whatever.
Whatever source. Yeah, whatever, you know, your God. And then believing, not 99% or 99.9%, 100% faith in that consciousness. Now, I give an analogy. You know, I have a two-year-old grandson now. He plays around his mother. Myself or my wife or my daughter will not let him anything happen. You know, whether he wants to put hand somewhere, he wants to climb somewhere. We are always watching him feeding. And that's the relationship exactly is between you and God.
Except for God knows everything.
Yes. But the thing is, now, if that child puts an ego, says, I knows everything, I don't need you.
Yeah, this is such a good analogy.
So that is the ego coming in between you and God.
Yeah.
That means what? I know better than God. I know better than the system, or you call it whatever, correct? The reason the challenge comes to you, because it wants to define you. And then you blame the challenge, why me? And then suddenly everything happens good, I did it. But anything happens wrong, God did it.
It's like an NFL coach. I've never asked you this, and you don't have to answer because it's personal, but what was one of your defining moments?
See, I've been very lucky since my childhood. My grandmother, my mother, you know, I used to read the scriptures and everything. And I was brought up on that belief that whatever happens, happens for good. So, yeah, challenges came. And then, of course, the ego came in me. You know, then there, you know, you think that you are king and, you know, you can do anything. And then God puts you down saying, okay, you know, creative destruction.
Yeah.
Right? Many, many times.
Famous quote, you're either humble or you're about to be.
Right? So, not once. Yeah. I've fallen maybe 10, 20 times. Doesn't matter. So, the thing is, I always tell my family, I tell my, you know, team, please do mistakes. But don't commit the same mistake. Until you don't commit the mistakes, you can never grow.
Yeah.
But please don't be stupid enough to commit the same mistake, right? That is not forgivable.
Yeah, even in Sanskrit, right? Life's about lessons. Lessons keep on coming until we learn them.
Yes.
And if you've ever had a chance to see The Rules of Being Human, and I'm happy to send it to anyone, what a clear, simple depiction of a simple way to live life, that others are the mirrors of you.
Yes.
One of my favorite things is that we will forget, and this applies to AI and technology, the last two lessons of being human in Sanskrit are, you will forget every lesson that was ever learned, but you have the power to remember it. So I believe in remembrance, reminding, and recollection to the Akashic Records. And so for you, as a final question, this remembrance of lessons, how does AI assist us in this idea of we will forget every lesson ever learned, but have the power to remember it?
See, that became my mission now with the cultural models. So how the story started 3 years ago, I was playing with AI and everything. We have the largest, you know, we were the largest studio. We are the, you know, music label, OTT platforms, you know, solar parks, you know, you name it, different divisions, different verticals. I was playing with, for Diwali, I was trying to make a video of Lord Goddess Lakshmi. And the AI produced the best technical video, but that Goddess Lakshmi started dancing like Beyonce. Okay. And that's where I thought that, you know, the AI doesn't understand culture. So then we started, you know, making cultural models, you know, which will empower, of course, you know, the creative arts industry. Then it's empowering now health. You know, we are working with Indian government and different governments across the world, empowering their preventative AI health. Through the face scan, we can actually predict 32 biomarkers, you know, which is 94% efficiency.
On your phone?
On the phone and everywhere. And this is all government endorsed now. They've deployed it across. We are working, so I was on the board of UCLA. So we have put in the creative arts industry course now, empowering different universities, whereby, you know, the students can become a filmmaker, producer, animator, anywhere, but using AI. UCLA, USC, or, you know, Berkeley, or, you know, NYU still have to adopt that. I think without AI today, you can't, you know, with this, whatever the models which are happening, a movie, like a $300 million movie now, can be done in $30 to $50 million better quality. Yeah. So, you know, we can empower students' creativity, correct? You see, the AI can't create trust, can't create culture.
Yeah.
AI can help. See, I think the creator economy will come. It will change. You know, you can have, like, maybe if I'm exaggerating, maybe 1 million Steven Spielbergs or Christopher Nolans in the world. Not one or two. The people from the world, tomorrow, a 12-year-old or a 20-year-old can make a better movie than Odyssey. That's going to happen. Okay. You can have a better actor. So that's what, you know, empowering them. Empowering, as we said, culture. Then we are working with different governments on the ethics. What is righteousness? That's important, right? Not right and wrong. How, you know, see, because I think AI is I think it's going to stay for the next 50 years, 100 years. So this is the biggest revolution, bigger than industrial revolution. So I think we have to have righteousness element of AI to go through every human being on this earth. So that's our mission. That with our AI, it's not about right or wrong, how you become righteousness and how it empowers your life also, empowers your love, relationships, and everything.
We are blessed to be with a mentor, a coach, and a teacher. A mentor is someone who sits in the situation that we want to be in. A teacher is someone that can teach us the steps to get there. But a coach is someone that can bring the best out of you to assist you so you don't quit. So you not only gives you the wisdom, but the faith, the ethics, the righteousness. And to me, that's what Kishore Lula represents.
I learned so much from you, David. You are my coach.
You're a blessing. Thank you so much. This is David Meltzer with Entrepreneurs, The Playbook.